Hi, welcome to another session of the Potter's Roundtable from Washington Street Studios in Bolivar, West Virginia, where the town is so small, we are the Arts District. I'm Phil Bernberg, and today's topic is firing the soda kiln at Washington Street Studios.
Welcome to the Potter's Roundtable, a monthly podcast where we share our passion for the ceramic arts and a collection of topics specific to potters. Remember to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. Enjoy the show.
Okay, so we thought it would be useful. In previous videos, we described the construction of the soda kiln. So we thought it would be useful to actually talk through the firing procedure that we used for the soda kiln. And just as a reminder, we completed the construction of the soda kiln in the fall of 2020, and we fired it the first time just empty, just to sort of test out to see how the burners and the flues worked. And then we fired it a second time with a small amount of soda. And so this firing that we're going to be talking about today was the third firing. The kiln, the design of the kiln basically is a downdraft design. I have a small schematic here on the board, but it's a downdraft design with a sprung arch. And the total volume of the chamber inside is about 28 cubic feet. And the actual wear chamber part of that inside is about 20 cubic feet. So it's a fairly small kiln. It's propane fired. We have two Ransom B4 burners that we use to fire the kiln. Okay, so the Ransom B4 burners, each one is about 250,000 BTUs per hour capacity. And the kiln is designed with two dampers. This is on the schematic here. So here are the burners at one end of the kiln and the bag wall and the wear stack. And then coming from the wear chamber, we actually have two dampers, one on either side, on each one of the two flues leading from the wear chamber. So this is the location of the damper in this small passageway between the kiln body and the chimney. So later on, when we talk about moving the dampers, this is what we're talking about sliding these dampers in and out. There's one damper on each side of the wear chamber. Also, for this particular firing, we increased the amount of soda that we used from last time. We ended up using a total of about 2.6 pounds of sodium carbonate, soda ash, for this firing. And the way we made that, we made the solution up ahead of time, and we dissolved about 1.6 pounds of sodium carbonate in a gallon of water. And the nice feature about that concentration is that it won't crystallize out. If you keep it at normal room temperatures, you can store it for months and make up a large supply, and you don't have to worry about it crystallizing out and changing. So we had made up a large supply of this previously. It still is a fairly concentrated solution, but not saturated enough where it starts forming crystals and lumps and things. So it's nice, you can just store it. And there are two, for injecting the soda, there are two soda ports directly above the burners. This is one of the soda ports where the soda is injected. So the goals of this particular firing, we had several different goals for it. First of all, in general, when firing this kiln, we want to get the shortest possible firing, but with good reduction, good overall soda distribution, and even temperatures. So we're trying to find a compromise between not wasting a lot of time doing unnecessary heating or doing something where we don't need to have the kiln just running and still getting, you know, the best results we can. We're also trying to use sort of a moderate amount of soda so that we get good flashing on the bare clay, but not so much that we actually produce a whole lot of the sort of gray, greenish-gray glaze from excessive amounts of soda. We were also, in this firing, we were testing the effect of added insulation on the top of the arch. Previously, we had two, on top of the arch, which was consisted of a single layer of arch bricks, we had 2 inches of Fibrefrax insulating blanket. And subsequent to the previous firing, we added another 2 inches. So we have a total of now of 4 inches of insulating blanket on top of the arch. And we wanted to see if that had any significant effect on the temperature distribution that we got within the kiln. And as I mentioned also, this firing, we used about double the amount of soda that we had in the previous firing. So we were also looking to evaluate the effect of that. Okay, well, the way we have the kiln set up, we have three 100-gallon propane tanks that are manifolded together to provide the propane supply. And the idea of that is the fact that we wanted to be able to get at least two firings out of a filling of the tanks, even in the coldest of weather. So we figured that's enough, that we shouldn't have any problem with that issue. When we set up the tank, we have a line pressure of about 10 to 12 PSI. That's the pressure in the line coming from the tanks to the secondary regulators and to the kiln. And we've been operating the kiln on 5 PSI, the burners on 5 PSI. We have secondary regulators close to the kiln where we can do the final adjustment of the gas pressure. So we've been operating the burners on 5 PSI. So for this particular firing, we also wanted to see if there was any advantage in preheating the chimney, if that helped a little bit in terms of shortening the firing or acquiring a good draft early on. So we started, in this particular case, we started the firing at about 7:50 in the morning, and we put a small Raku burner into a clean-out port that we had at the bottom of the chimney. That was about 7:50 in the morning. Okay, so it was about 8 o'clock when we actually lit the burners, the two burners, and the dampers were set at 2 inches. So what we were trying to do at this point early in the firing was basically to get as rapid a heat up as we could. I don't subscribe to the idea that you have to take it slowly. In this case, all the pots had been glazed previously and they were dry, so we weren't worried about that. And we didn't have any pots that we were refiring, so we weren't worried about possible cristobalite, you know, expansion or changes. So I believe, basically, my experience has shown that you can heat the pots up pretty quickly and not worry about any explosions or cracking. So we turned on the burners at about 8 o'clock, and we just barely lit them. And the dampers were set at about a 2-inch opening on each damper. And then we kept, for about the next hour, we kept tweaking up the burners a little bit. And basically, the way I like to operate the kiln is we adjust the burners, the valves on the burners themselves, just really by sound. When I'm talking about turning up the burners a little bit, I'll turn them up just enough where I can hear a difference in the sound of the burner, which means that I've turned up the volume a little bit and I'm getting a little more gas. So between 8 and 9 o'clock, we went up 600 degrees an hour. Okay, that's probably the fastest initial heating rate. And then, you know, and you're probably aware also that as you go up higher in temperature, it's a principle of physics, you're going to get less and less rapid heating rates because the kiln is going to lose heat faster. So it's kind of a race you're running where the higher temperature you go, the faster the kiln is losing heat, so the faster you have to put in heat to make the temperature rise. So then from 9 o'clock, so we had the dampers open, and we found that in this particular kiln, some of these little details we worked out during the first firing, but we found that 2 inches was a kind of a good balance for the dampers. You don't want them open too wide because then actually you're actually wasting heat. We're trying to retain as much heat as we can in the kiln and still not, at this point, we don't want to go into reduction. So we're trying to get good oxidizing conditions, good efficient burning of the gas, and yet not so much, not have the dampers open so wide that we're losing excessive heat up the chimney. So during the first run of the kiln, the first firing, this is where we figured out that 2 inches was kind of a good setting for our kiln to sort of balance those two properties. So then from 9 o'clock to about 9:30, again, we would turn up the burners periodically. We're checking the temperature. There's a pyrometer. This view that we have over here is looking sort of at the right side of the kiln. When I say the right and the left, I'm always talking sort of from the burner end, as if we're standing at the burner end. So in about the middle of the chamber, right about here, we have a pyrometer that sticks into the chamber, and that's where we're checking our temperatures. So between 9 o'clock and 9:30, we were still turning up the burners a little bit. In this case, we were still going up about 500 degrees an hour. So by 9:30, we were basically at 900 degrees. And again, we're watching the temperature rise. At 10 o'clock, we turned up the burners a little bit more. And at this point, when we were getting it, we were at 10, a little after 10, quarter after 10, we were about 1,200 degrees. And so we had gone up now about 400 degrees an hour. So we're slowing down a little bit. We started off with 600, then we went to 500. Now we're going down to about 400 degrees an hour. And this is just kind of a natural characteristic of the kiln. The bricks are starting to absorb more heat, and you can only force the heating so much. And you don't want to overforce it. So we're trying to sort of go the maximum rate we can and still have, you know, good heating. So then between 10 and about 11, we were still watching the heat rise. We're looking for a steady heat rise. Now we had gone down to about 300 degrees an hour temperature rise. So at 11 o'clock, we were just about at about 1400 degrees. So we had started it at 8 o'clock, and now at 11 o'clock, 3 hours later, we were at 1400 degrees. And we noticed at this point, one of the things I'm also looking for is, again, we're not ready to go into reduction. So we pulled out some of the bricks on the door of the kiln, the where we had, where we, you know, that we had set up so that you could observe the cones in the kiln. And one way to see what the atmosphere in the kiln is to look for the accumulation of soot on the ends of the bricks. So at 11 o'clock, at about 1400, we noticed we were getting a little soot on the bricks, and we weren't ready. We still wanted to get a good temperature rise. That means at that point, remember, we had been turning up the gas, but we hadn't been affecting the air, and we hadn't been changing the damper. The damper was still at 2 inches. So basically, by increasing the gas and not changing the air, we had gone into slight reduction because we hadn't been adjusting the air to keep up with the gas. So when we saw that soot, we decided that we needed to open the dampers a little bit. So we opened the dampers to 2.25 inches because now to provide a little more air with the additional gas that we had been providing. And we kept monitoring the temperature. And finally, we started noticing at around 11:20, about 20 minutes later, that we had our cone O12, which we had in the top part of the kiln. This is the one that we use to monitor for the beginning of reduction. We found with this particular kiln that we get really good reduction results if we start the reduction fairly early at about cone O12, which is around 1550, 1560 degrees, 600 degrees. So finally at 11:30, O12 was basically bending. It was 90 degrees. So we decided, okay, we're going to start the sort of official reduction period at around 11:30. So we, in this case, we move the dampers in to 1.5 inches. And again, we worked some of this out from the first and the second firings. How much can you move the damper in? How much can you choke off the exhaust to still get combustion and yet go into reduction? And this is part of this balance will be different for every single kiln. The idea is you want to cut by pushing the damper in, you're reducing the draw of the chimney, and so you're reducing the amount of secondary air that you're pulling into the kiln. So if I reduce the secondary air coming in, then I'm not providing enough air to burn all the gas. Well, that's what I want. I want to go into reduction. But I don't want to choke the flame off so much that I actually lose temperature. So this is one of the tricky parts of firing a reduction kiln, whether it's a wood kiln or a gas kiln or any kind of kiln where you're burning a fuel, is how do I provide enough air so that I can I either don't lose temperature or I can maintain a slight rise and yet still choke it off enough where I'm into reduction. And we found again from the previous firings that 1.5 inches setting was a pretty good setting for this one. So the difference between 2 inches at lower temperatures and 1.5 inches allows us to go into reduction. So at 11:30, we pushed the dampers in, we went into reduction, and now we're monitoring to see the thing we know we're in reduction because you can look inside the kiln and you start seeing the hazy atmosphere. And we also started to see a little bit of thin black smoke coming out of the chimney. And you can smell that sort of heavy smell that you get when the gas is not burning completely. But the important thing here was to check to see, are we still getting a temperature rise or what's happening to the temperature? We don't want the temperature to plummet too much because we'd have trouble regaining temperature. So ideally, we'd like the temperature to be creeping up slowly and still be in reduction. And we were able to achieve that with this damper setting. So finally, at around 12 o'clock, we had gotten up to, we had lost a little bit of temperature at this point. So we closed the dampers a little bit more to around 1.25 inches. And again, what we wanted to do here was we wanted to get a little more back pressure. What we would do is we would pull out, we had 3 bricks in the door, 2 bricks to observe cones, and one brick or one port for draw rings. And so we could pull out the 3 bricks basically at the top and the middle and the bottom of the door and to see what kind of back pressure we were getting. And we wanted to make sure that we were getting enough back pressure, the flame coming out of the peepholes, to again indicate that we had good reduction. And you create the back pressure because if you think about it, you're blowing gas into the kiln and you're drawing air into the kiln, and you're not providing enough of a place for it to exit. So it has to go somewhere. And so if I'm in heavy reduction, I don't have enough air, but I'm pushing a lot of gas in. Anytime I create an opening in the kiln, it'll come out. And so that's what we were looking for. We're looking to see, did we have enough good back pressure? So by cutting the dampers down even further now to 1.25 inches, we were able to get good back pressure out of all three ports. And we also got a little more black smoke out of the chimney. So this meant we were in good reduction. So we stayed here for a while. Now at this point, we are losing a little bit of temperature, not a lot. After about 12:30, almost at the end of reduction, we had lost about 40 degrees, 30 or 40 degrees, which is not bad at all. That's easy to regain. And so finally, at around 12:30, we had been in reduction for about an hour. We decided that we're going to ease out of reduction instead of just going directly from reduction and opening the dampers back the way we were before to go back to temperature rise. We were going to sort of ease out of reduction. So it's 12:30. We moved the dampers back to 1.5 inches. Remember, we had gone as low as 1.25 inches. We moved them back out to 1.5 inches, which is where we were sort of at the start of reduction. And we're starting, and again, now we're going to monitor the temperature. We're going to try to get some temperature rise and gradually come out of reduction. And then at 12:45, we were up to about 1,572 degrees. We opened the dampers a little bit more. We were back to 1.75 inches. And so finally, and then at 1 o'clock, we moved the dampers back to 2 inches. And so that was the official end of reduction. So we really had, from 11:30 to 12:30, we had sort of heavy reduction. And then from 12:30 to 1, we were sort of coming back out of reduction over a period of time. So we were back to 2 inches. And 2 inches is still, with this amount of gas we have going in, we're still basically in reduction, but light enough where we can get some temperature rise. So this is where we're back to this balancing act of trying to get temperature rise and still maintain reduction, because we don't want to lose all the reduction that we accomplished, the reduction of the glazes and the clay, and go into oxidation at this point. So now we're monitoring the temperature rise again, checking for reduction. So between 1 o'clock in the afternoon and 2 o'clock, by 2 o'clock we had reached about 1,800. And at this point now, we're only going up about 200 degrees an hour between 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock. We're up to about 1,800. 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, in that period, we opened the dampers even further a little bit, up to about 2.5 now. And at this point, we were going up to about 125 degrees an hour. So you notice these blocks of time, we've been steadily sort of slowing down the temperature rise, but still maintaining a good temperature rise. By 4 o'clock, we were up to about almost 2,050 degrees. And shortly after that, we noticed that one of our cone packs that we have in the kiln, for observing the temperature, we use cone 7, cone 9, and cone 10. Cone 7 gives us kind of an early warning that we're getting to the temperature range where we have to pay a little more attention and we can't go off and drink beer while we're supposedly watching the kiln. So it gives us a little early warning that we have to pay attention. And then we have 9 and 10 to sort of more closely watch what's happening. So about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we reached about 2,060 degrees at the bottom of the kiln, and we noticed that one of the cone 7s was starting. So we're getting close, you know, we're approaching sort of critical temperatures. One of the cone 7s at the bottom of the kiln had gone down, and this is when we were going to start spraying in the soda for this particular spring. And I think I mentioned early on the concentration, the amount of soda that we were using. So now we pulled, at the end of the last spring, we pulled the dampers open even further. Now we're out to about 3 inches to try to get the final temperature rise. Finally, at about 8 o'clock at night, we were up to about 2,280 degrees, 2,270 degrees. Both of the cone 7s were down and one of the cone 10s was down. And we decided to stop the firing at that point, because one of the things we also wanted to see was, with soda has a natural fluxing effect, of course, on the clay and the glazes. And we wanted to see, even though we know we hadn't gotten perfect temperature distribution, was that sufficient at least to with the additional fluxing we get from the soda to mature all the glazes and to give sufficient flashing. So we ended the kiln at 8:30. We ended the firing. We had ended up at about 2,290 degrees. So we hadn't gotten to cone 10 everywhere, but we thought that, you know, that was probably adequate. So the results of the firing basically overall were, it was a very good firing overall. The bottom was still hotter than the top, and what this suggests is that we're going to have to make further adjustments to the bag wall. This is one of the features we've been doing since the beginning. We've been modifying the arrangement of the bag wall to make sure that we get enough flame up in the top of the kiln. What we found out is with this particular kiln is early on in the firing, the flame tends to be easily deflected to the top of the kiln. But then later on in the firing, as the blast from the burners becomes more intense, it tends to not shoot up as high in the kiln and go and just kind of skip over the top of the bag wall and head for the exit. So the bottom of the kiln in temperature catches up and surpasses the top of the kiln. So this is something we're going to have to work on, but that's easily done, I think, pretty much with the bag wall. We got really excellent soda reduction. This is an example of one of the pots of the, we got really nice flashing. This is standard 182, and we got really nice flashing overall. The nice thing to see about we found when we unloaded the kiln also was the flashing wasn't, and the reaction with the soda wasn't just confined to the front face of the shelf stack. It was throughout the shelf stack, and even on the pots in the back, we got very nice flashing. And the flashing also was not very directional. It was fairly uniform around all surfaces of the pots, except in some cases where maybe a pot was very close behind a larger pot and it was shielded. But overall, we got a nice sort of cloud effect of the soda rather than just being sort of a blast or a flame passing through the pots. We got some fairly heavy soda reduction. This is a good example of a vase that's showing the glaze produced on bare clay from the soda, but with the carbon trapping as well. So at least for right now, this is probably about as heavy a soda application as we're going to stay with, at least for a while. So we had the range where from lighter soda, you get the flashing, and then from heavier soda, you start to develop the actual glaze from the soda. And as you're probably aware, once you start developing this glaze, it actually dissolves the flashing and the flashing goes away. So when the soda gets this heavy, you've lost the possibility, you've covered over or obliterated the possibility of flashing. One of the other features that we had in here, we also included a number of test cups. We've decided to use small mugs actually as glaze samples around our studio here for the people to see what the results are, because instead of using small test coupons, because the effects of the soda and the reduction firing are so variable over the surface, which is a nice feature, but it's hard to really judge the results just from looking at a small sample. So instead, what we're going to do is we're going to produce small mugs like this, where we can show some bare clay on the bottom and dip the inside and the top part with a glaze, for example. And that way you have a larger area to look at and to see what the effects are, rather than just a small coupon. So this was a nice example of, this again, I think, is standard 182 clay. And this is an Ohatakaki, kind of a nice sort of tomato, one of the tomato red cone 10 reduction glazes. But again, with the soda, you get some nice variation with it. You get a little bit of bleaching on the rim where it turns a little lighter, so it tends toward a sort of a gold color. And then this was a glaze. This was our blue salt glaze. And again, on this particular one, this is all bare clay on the bottom. So we poured the inside, dipped the rim, then double dipped the rim, and then so you can see the flashing that you get. You can see the difference between the slightly heavier soda on the front versus the back, but still a good application on the back. So we're going to be setting up a mug rack. So these will become the kind of samples that we provide for the studio to show really a better idea about the effects you get with the soda firing. So basically, we were very pleased with the results. We didn't see a huge effect of the added insulation on the top, because I think the effect of the bag wall is overpowering sort of the in terms of the temperature distribution. And the increased soda, we decided that this is about amount of soda that we're going to stick with for a while. We got good results with it. So the only thing we have to work with now is tinkering with the bag wall to get a little better temperature distribution. But basically, the results were very satisfactory overall. Okay, well, we hope that this discussion has been useful. Again, this was really meant to, one of the important features we wanted to show this time was there's when you're making changes when you're firing a kiln, there's a reason to do it. There's logic behind it. So you're not randomly trying to change things. You're thinking about I'm trying to get more combustion to generate more heat, or I'm trying to balance the heat rise with the reduction. There's a reason you want to do anything. So we thought it might be useful to talk through some of these. If you'd like to hear this again, you can listen to our podcast version. Just search for the Potter's Roundtable on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoyed the presentation, please like it and subscribe to our channel and share it with your friends and other potters. This helps our videos get found. Also, check out our website, www.hfclay.com. We really want to thank our patrons for supporting our educational efforts, such as these videos. If you'd like to help us, consider becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com and look for the Potter's Roundtable. Thank you very much for joining us today.
The Potter's Roundtable is brought to you by Washington Street Studios and our patrons. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and tell your friends. If you want to learn more about Washington Street Studios and shared studio memberships, please visit our website at www.hfclay.com. Thank you, and we'll see you again next time on the Potter's Roundtable.